And we're back here on In Focus News Radio KMAN. We're talking about the Cold War in Manhattan, as well as Kansas in general, but I believe we have another caller looking to share their thoughts with us. So, caller, go ahead. You're on In Focus.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I know you're at KMAN where the news, where the sun is always shining, but I'm going to give you a little, a few things to think about. I was in Bluemont School when all this was going on, and we're supposed to get under our desk, cover your head, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I want everybody to think about something, why we were such a vulnerable area. Number one, we got Kansas State University right here. We got Fort Riley, Kansas, 7 miles away. We had a base in Topeka. We had a base in Salina. We had Offutt Air Force Base. We had Lincoln, Nebraska, Wichita, Kansas, Kansas City, Denver, and Boeing, and the biggest aircraft manufacturing town in the world. If they shot a missile over here and they missed, they're going to hit something that's vulnerable. So if you stop and think about that, it's very good reason that Manhattan was very, very concerned about their citizens, which they should be with NBAP. When the monkeys get out up there, I don't know what we're going to do with all the money if everybody's dead. Thanks for your time.
Well, luckily, they have some containment protocols they're putting in place, but we'll have them on, I think, maybe next month again. I think we had them on earlier this month to talk about that. But, yeah, there's quite a bit of military activity in the area, that's for sure. So speaking of that, though, we're kind of going to transition here into a little bit of civil defense training talk a little bit more as well. Appreciate that call always, 785-537-1350 if you want to share your thoughts. We're going to talk about K-State's sort of avenue into the civil defense training world as well, and how they helped enter that world and help promote training.
Certainly. As we would expect, K-State was involved in training people around the state. That's K-State's role as a land-grant university. They hired Jerry Boettger. He was a new young nuclear engineer who just had graduated, and so they hired him to go and do trainings around the state of Kansas, much as we would do in other, you know, extension trainings on whatever. So shortly after the Cuban Missile Crisis, he went to work for Kansas State University, so in 1962-63. His mission was to travel the state and educate people about the building of fallout shelters. His students were also often municipal employees or people affiliated with hospitals and universities. And he was to teach them to teach others. So he was going to help them understand kind of what they ought to do in their area, how to do it. Jerry currently lives in Manhattan. He's 80. He's a member of the Manhattan Rotary Club and was at our program recently when Landry Brewer, the author of Cold War Kansas, came to speak. And he said, yeah, it was really a fun time to go and do this. I mean, it's also scary, but it was fun for him to get out, travel the state. And he says often, you know, when you go to these trainings, they'd say, okay, well, it'd probably only be 20 people here. Well, then he'd get there and it'd be 40 or 50 or 60 people because people were so scared and so interested in this and needing this knowledge. So, you know, another part of whole, you know, the fear, but also the interest in what was going on at that time and, you know, a little history of K-State being involved as usual in this sort of training.
Yeah, definitely. And also, as a result, that we talked a little bit about how K-State got involved. There's a lot of training, a lot of education, and that's led to a lot of different people putting up their own personal shelters in the area, their own fallout shelters, their own various ways to keep themselves safe. And I find some of the ways they've made different items or different, I guess, reused components of systems become their shelters. And I find some of the ways people have, I want to say, MacGyvered it pretty fascinating.
Yeah, there was a K-State University engineering professor. He converted a discarded Union Pacific Railroad water tank into his family's backyard fallout shelter. And so he dug this huge hole, got this thing down in there somehow, left the floor of it dirt in case they needed to keep digging farther or, you know, get rid of waste or whatever. And this wasn't a cheap endeavor. This was just over $1,000, which in today's money would be $11,000 or $12,000. So it was not an inexpensive undertaking.
It's like a full-on house addition at that point, or maybe a little less than these days. I don't know.
Be fascinating to know, is that thing still in the backyard, kind of rusting away? I don't know.
Well, and that's what's interesting, too, going through the local newspapers in the 1960s and even into the 70s, when they're advertising a home for sale, that was one of the selling points that they had for the house sale was, this has a fallout shelter, and whether it's a home-built one or one that they brought somebody in to build. But that was really interesting how prolific those advertisements were through the papers during that time. Just that was a selling point. Here's a house. Better yet, it's got a fallout shelter with it. So that's something we don't really see a whole lot today.
No, it's a sign of the times, that's yes. for sure. You hear, you know, basements, maybe some attic right. talk, but shelters not very often, I'll be honest.
Right. And even in looking at Royal Purple yearbooks or the Manhattan High School yearbooks, you find different references to, for example, one has Manhattan High School, I believe it was 1962. A gal is getting her books out of her locker, and it mentions something about the books are falling out, and she's contending with the fallout from the books. I mean, so you have these little references throughout those times that it's obviously in the forefront of everybody's mind what was happening.
And we're talking a Cold War in Manhattan as well as Kansas in general here again. If you have any phone calls, 785-537-1350. And I'm just curious, we're talking about some of the shelter locations in Manhattan now. We talked about Union Pacific water tank that got turned into a shelter. What are some other notable examples in the Manhattan area of maybe not necessarily always makeshift, but shelters popping up in certain ways?
Absolutely. And as I mentioned, in the collection of the Riley County Historical Society Museum, we have several pamphlets, whether they are national pamphlets or some of the local ones. So one of the ones that we have is a list of Manhattan shelters during that time from the 1960s. So some of them that would be familiar, the Holiday Inn there at 1501 North Tuttle Creek, or what was the Holiday Inn there. Several fraternities, Phi Beta Pi, 1819 Todd, Wharton Manor was another. As I mentioned, several different fraternities, the Farmhouse Fraternity there on College Heights. Other elementary schools, of course, that would be important to have a shelter for students. So Eugene Field School, Roosevelt, Lee, and they did have, as we talked about, those signs that noted that these are designated fallout shelters, which, by the way, if anybody might have one that they're looking to part with, the Riley County Historical Society Museum would be very, very interested. That is a piece that we do not have in the collection. But some of the other ones here, the county jail, Penny's, Shoes Cafe there at 507 Points, Duck Walls, the Wareham Hotel was another one. The Palace Drugstore, and that one's really interesting. So they're at 704 North Manhattan, where Varsity Donuts is today. And Mr. Dean Taylor, who is just a brilliant historian, knows so much, and who in that building attended a program that he was at. And he talked about how thick the concrete floor was, so it naturally served as a great fallout shelter. In the basement, yes, there of the Palace Drugstore. So Manhattan High also was one, Lucky High School, and the Manhattan Junior High, First Lutheran Church. So I'm just naming off some of them that are listed here, but you can see they had them not only in Manhattan, but a list of in Riley County as well. You want to make sure everybody out in the county has some protection. So the Keats Grade School, Riley State Bank, the IOOF home, it's now the Flint Hills Job Corps out there as you're heading toward the airport.
The Oddfellows House, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that was one as well. So they had them. Of course, they weren't built for that. Some of them, they made additions to make them safe for, and when we say safe for fallout shelters, you know, that's something we were discussing earlier. How much is this really going to protect somebody in the event of nuclear war? But it does make you feel better to know you've got a safe place to go.
It probably depends on proximity of the blast in some ways, I would
absolutely.
Imagine.
Absolutely. So those are just to name a few, but it's really fascinating to look at some of these artifacts that we have to see where what was going on at the time.
A lot of any missile silos in Riley County?
Not in Riley County.
Of course, we had the notorious one over by Wamego that became an LSD lab.
Yes, and we were going to mention that one. So
yeah, there's one for sale in Dickinson County, mm-hmm. about 2 miles from where I grew up.
Ooh.
A silo, silo. Interesting,
yeah.
Okay.
Now, it needs a lot of work, and you've heard the stories probably up around Concordia. There's a silo that is now like a zombie apocalypse, residential place where you can get a unit for like $1 million.
Oh, whoa. Gosh. Okay.
And that's a floor.
Whoa.
And there are several floors. I mean, sure. You can have your own your own condo in a silo.
It'd be interesting to see what the like your neighbors would be like living in that area, because each floor having its own occupant, it would be interesting to see what the community would be like.
And they've, I mean, it's set up to where they got like recreation centers and all kinds of other things that are available there. But the one in Dickinson County, I think you can buy it right now for about $450,000.
Oh, my gosh.
And it needs a several million dollars worth of work.
Wow.
If you want to do something with that.
I think I would miss the sunlight, though. I can't imagine living underground.
Well, in case you really need it.
Yep.
You know, the sun is going to be, you know, maybe your worst enemy.
That's true.
In the case of, you know, what could be the worst situation. You don't want to see the sun.
Right.
I don't know if you know
this. Die.
I don't know if you know this, but I think our former KMAN employee James Copeland might be living in a missile silo right now.
Oh, is he really?
Oh,
he did, at least for a period. He stayed there.
I was just talking about him with a friend the other day about James and his Winnebago.
Yeah, his national tour in the Cougo Winnebago.
Yeah, I haven't followed up on him.
I've seen photos of him in a missile silo though, so I don't know if he's still there. But it's on the line of conversation. Maybe he had dropped a million on it. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
But no, that the one out by Wamego, though, we were discussing that because they had one, I believe it was one of the largest LSD busts in the nation.
Yes.
That occurred there. And then I believe it's been converted to a private residence today.
I was looking at the Google Maps of this before we got on air, and it's kind of hard to see the street view. I'm not going to drive over there because it's probably private property, and that's probably why the Google Maps car didn't get a chance to go over there in the first place. But you can kind of – it's at a 16795 Auburn Circle. You can kind of Google Maps it out and check out from a little bit of a distance what the property looks like currently. It's a little overgrown looking, not tremendously bad, but I imagine it's nothing quite like it used to be in the 90s when it was being used as a major lab.
Well, and when these were decommissioned, K-State inherited three of these. Government granted them to K-State to use for research. The Wamego one, Chapman and Abilene went to K-State originally, but what happened over time was it was too expensive to maintain and run these things, and you know, eventually they went to other uses. But fascinating. I had no idea that K-State owned missile silos for a while. It's pretty cool.
And as we talk, I want to touch back a little bit on all the locations of shelters at schools we brought up. And we talk about some of the additions to schools that are currently happening, or at least happened recently in terms of storm shelters. And it makes me wonder how useful these may have been as storm shelters as well. You know, we questioned whether they're effective, you know, for fallout in certain circumstances. Did these have double uses in some ways? Were they ever employed in that way? Are you familiar?
Oh, absolutely. And of course, being here in Kansas, that's one thing that we contend with is severe weather. And a lot of them, it was in the basement, they would kind of convert it to fit the fallout shelter, what they needed as far as guidelines for that. So they weren't built specifically as fallout shelters. So of course they would double for storm protection, and they were just trying to adapt the best they can. But some of them, they did put some money into actually converting them. I use that word to make them to where they're safe for in the event of nuclear war. But yes, using them for space, and they're still there today. I mean, if you go to the junior high there, the old high school there on Points Avenue, you can go down in the basement and see where they did have that as the designated shelter.
Alana, Nick, you're not old enough to remember these drills that we used to have, Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
When we were in schools, in elementary schools, you know, we did, well, they were, I think, disguised as tornado drills, but the real fear was, you know, if there was some sort of nuclear attack, that we would all line up in the lowest portion of the building and put our heads between our knees and cover them up with our hands.
You know, I think we finished that in the more colloquial finish of that saying, but it was something my dad would tell me.
I was going to say, please share what your dad said.
Yeah, my dad said it all the time, actually. Whenever we talked about this, he brought that saying up. I'm
Pucker
not going to finish
up.
It. Yeah, exactly. You know what I'm talking about there. But yeah, I heard that quite a bit. He went through the same thing, and out there, and he was from Encino, California. He went to a Catholic school out there, and they did very similar drills, but instead of tornadoes, we masked them as earthquake drills, because we're crawling under the table anyhow. And in California, though, I don't think they were really allowed the basements. It wasn't really as safe given the earthquakes as well. So it was. It makes me wonder how they handled that. I must say, the basement is a much nicer addition when it comes to worrying about fallout. So maybe a perk for Kansas on that, among others as well. Let's take our last break of the morning. We have plenty more to talk about, but we're going to conclude when we come back. News Radio KMAN.